I was actually, it's been kind of beneficial when I have to fill in at the front desk sometimes because I actually will just say, the work on my desk stays on my desk. I have to focus on what I'm doing at the front desk. And there's been a little bit of downtime where I actually get to look at a newspaper. I don't watch the news on TV, but I will look at a newspaper. This is from the Times Free Press out of Chattanooga from this last Saturday. This is from the Faith and Family section. And this article caught my attention. Louis Zamperini. Do you maybe remember who Louis Zamperini is? There was a big movie called Unbroken about his life, his life story, about his time in the service, being captured, tortured, living through sharks. I mean, all kinds of things. It was just one of those amazing life stories. Well, this article is The Rest of the Real Life Unbroken Story. The lanky young evangelist from North Carolina was starting to attract media attention by the end of his 1949 tent revival in Los Angeles, which means that professionals recorded his sermons. So historians know exactly what the Reverend Billy Graham said during the sermons that changed Louis Zamperini's life. And because of author Laura Hillenbrandt's 75-plus interviews with Olympian and World War II bombardier, millions of readers know what happened inside his heart during the altar call. In her 2010 bestseller, Unbroken, she wrote, "Why," Graham asked, "is God silent when good men suffer?" He began his answer by asking his audience to consider the evening sky. And then he goes on, but it says, Zamperini flashed back to his 47 days in a lifeboat after crashing in the Pacific, including the moment when he stared at the heavens and whispered, "If you will save me, I will serve you forever." Stunned, now he's back in the tent at a tent revival, listening to Billy Graham, and as he hears this altar call, he is stunned and he tries to flee the tent. But Graham said, "You can't leave while I'm preaching, not now." With every head bowed and every eye closed, there was no way around the fact that this was the moment when Zamperini escaped his demons. So it goes on. The first movie that we saw was about the miraculous, life-saving part of his life as far as, again, what he went through with the heartbreak of being an Olympian, the war and everything. They're coming out with a sequel to that movie, Unbroken, which is actually going to touch on the next part of his life, which is. Everyone knows that the story included a revival tent with the familiar image of Graham giving an altar call and a sinner being born again. Zamperini went home that night and poured his whiskey down the drain, even the hidden bottles. He threw away his girly magazines, and he dug out his Air Corps Bible. He later traveled to Tokyo and, in a face-to-face meeting, forgave his prison guards. Watanabe refused to face him. That was one of his torturers. So Zamperini wrote his torturer a letter that ended with this: "I asked about you and was told that you had probably committed harakiri, which I was sad to hear," in other words, committed suicide. "At that moment, like others, I forgave you, and now would hope that you would also become a Christian." This isn't a normal movie plot, but this is what happened in his life. My promise to Lou 20 years ago was that we would try to tell the whole story of his life. This was the path that Lou walked, and we wanted to put it on the screen. This young man started out with a plan for his life. He planned to be a sports competitor. Then he was called into service for his country, and he planned to do that well. The other things that happened along the way, he didn't plan for those, but the movie shares his life experiences. But what touched me was the rest of the story that I really didn't know about. The demons that he faced when he came home that led him to realize he had to make a plan to change his life or he was going to die. He made a plan to be open, to whatever that would take to change his life. So when he went to this tent revival meeting, he wanted to flee, but God was saying no, because he had already opened the door saying, I need to make a change. I need to change my life. So when he accepted that invitation to accept Jesus as his Savior, he walked out of that revival a changed man with a new plan for his life. We all make plans. That is a wonderful, miraculous story. But for me, I'm going to switch gears to one that actually I can identify with a little bit better. One of my favorite books that I've had for many, many, many years is called At the Corner of Mundane and Grace, which is where most of us live. We don't live those lives like Lou Zamperini with those miraculous stories that people are wanting to make movies about our lives. That's not where most of us live. We live in that real world at the corner of mundane and grace. I believe that heroic faith is forged in everyday furnaces. I believe extraordinary things happen to people who find glimpses of glory in ordinary days. We've forgotten that we serve the God of the humdrum, the deity who takes a mediocre existence and transforms it into a chorus of praise. The subtle message sent by many books and seminars is that he is only the God of the big splash, the dramatic testimony, the miraculous healing. He is the God who fixes us in one weekend. Now, don't get me wrong, God does miracles, but he's also the king of the common. Sometimes he chooses not to fix the brokenness in our lives for a reason, and it's in the long haul, these fallow times, that we either grow or we stagnate. Living fully in the ordinary is difficult. It's a little like trying to hold a cloud. As we grasp at distractions, time slips through our fingers, and sometimes it's just easier to let go, turn on the television. But don't give up. Keep looking, and God will take you by surprise with glimpses of glory. Your life will be much richer when you open your eyes, seize the gift of today, and experience it in all its fullness. Now I'm going to jump to one more story, one that we're all familiar with, and it comes from the Bible. And again, it's one of my favorite stories in the Bible, and that's the story of Naomi and Ruth. If you don't know that story, you need to read that book. And I'm going to just put it in a little nutshell. Naomi and her family moved to a faraway town because where they lived, there was a drought, and they needed to survive, so they went away. They went to this other town. Her husband, her sons found jobs. They found work. They had food to eat. Well, her three sons married while they were there. Three sons? Two sons? See, I'm so tired I can't even think straight. But her sons married while they were there. Naomi was at that time of life where things going good. You know, they made a plan to take care of their family. It's going well. And then plans change. Plans change quickly. The husband died and the sons died. So here she is with two daughter-in-laws. And Naomi, bless her heart, the thing of this story that always amazes me is Naomi kind of comes across as, oh, God, why are you doing this to me? You know, what have I done? Do we ever do that? Do you ever look at circumstances in your life and go, oh, God, why are you doing this to me? Sometimes there's not an answer. But that was Naomi, and fortunately, she had a daughter-in-law, Ruth, who said, it's okay, Naomi. It's okay. I'm going to take care of you. And finally, Ruth connected with Naomi, and Naomi's like, I've got to make a new plan for my life. I've got to make some changes. I'm going to go back home to my country and to my people and start anew. She said, you girls need to stay here with your country and your families. Well, I don't know how Naomi and her, why, God, are you doing this to me? Kind of what I see, which I'm sure is just a very minuscule part of who Naomi really was, because God was seen by Ruth through Naomi. Ruth saw God through Naomi, and Ruth said, I'm going to make a change. I want to make a new plan in my life. Now, there's something in the story of Ruth, a few verses, that we are all familiar with. Naomi's ready to go home. She's got her little bag packed, and she's walking down the road. Bye, girls. I love you. We'll probably never see each other again, but I'll always remember you. And as she's going, she's walking down the road, and she turns around, and there's Ruth, and Ruth's got her little bag. She says, Naomi, I can't let you go. I can't let you go. I want to be with you. Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. Now, we're talking about two people here, not a husband and wife, not a natural mother-daughter birth relationship. We're talking about a young woman who saw God through her mother-in-law and became so connected to her that she gave up her own life in order to devote it to the care of her mother-in-law. So they made a plan. Okay, Naomi says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go back to my country. Here's how we're going to do it, because we have to be careful. And when we get there, we'll see what kind of response we get, and then we'll tweak our plan from there. So they get back home. They get settled in. They're well-received. Everybody's so happy to see Naomi. And here's Ruth. She's in this town that's totally new, different from where she lived, all new, different people. She doesn't know a soul. She doesn't know their customs. But she's willing to learn. She's willing to open her mind and go, I made a plan. I'm going to change my life, and I'm going to figure this out. And so she listens to Naomi. And again, when you think of Naomi, is she going, oh, I've got the power to do something with this young woman. I can shape her. I can mold her. I can make her into something great. Do you think that crossed Naomi's mind? No. Naomi's like us. She's living at the corner of mundane and gray. She's going, oh, thank you, Jesus, that my people took me back in. Oh, now, Jesus, we've got a plan. We got back home. Now the next plan is, how are we going to survive? Because we're two women with no man to support us. So we need some help. So she gets with Ruth and goes, we need help, Ruth. This is the reality of the situation we're in. You need to understand that. And if you're going to stick with me, it ain't going to be easy. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. Are you still with me? And Ruth says, I am. You tell me what to do. You teach me. So Naomi teaches Ruth about her people and their customs and about her God. She sends her out. She goes, okay, I know that God is going to take care of us. So I'm going to come up with a plan, and we're going to see how God leads and guides and directs. We know the story. Most of us know the story. She sets Ruth up to go out and meet, to work, initially just to work, to bring home food. And then she starts realizing, oh, I've got an opportunity to do some matchmaking here. Okay, okay, God, will this work? Will this work? I can imagine that Naomi, at some point, even though she was that, oh, God, why me? Because we're no different. We all are at that, oh, God, why me? But then we can get down on our knees and say, oh, God, I don't know why me, but I need your help. I need your guidance. And lead me, direct me. So the rest of the story is Ruth goes out. She doesn't really understand what she's doing or why she's doing it, but she does it. She loves her mother-in-law. She does it. And, of course, she meets Boaz. Boaz falls in love with her. They get married. There's a little bit of a tradition that Boaz has to go through to be able to make Ruth his wife. But they get married, and they have a son. And this is one of those stories where they live happily ever after. Ruth lived with Naomi. They probably died and were buried right there next to each other. This is a story that has a beautiful ending. And why do you think that is? Who did Naomi consult? Who was Ruth looking towards? Naomi, who God was shining through. God was in this picture, in this story, big time. Now, does that mean because we have God in our lives that it's always going to be a happy ending? Oh, contraire. I see heads going like this, and I disagree. And I'm going to tell you why as we explain this verse a little bit more. Many are the plans in a person's heart. We make plans. Plans change. They don't always work out. Sometimes we make plans, and I'm going to go back to what impressed me from the very beginning with this verse, was making plans, and then have any of you ever experienced this? God going, just sit tight where you are. That's a great plan, but nope. Some of you heard a few months ago, several months ago, that Sherry was thinking about retirement. Like, I am so tired, I am ready to retire, and I started making plans. Making plans are not a bad thing, but knowing when to listen to God's approval or redirection of those plans is critical. And so as I started making plans, things started coming up where it was like, this just might not be the best idea right now. You might need to step back. So I'm like, okay, God, I'm going to step back. I'm going to reevaluate this. I'm going to kind of put that on hold. But I really still need to be thinking about what I'm going to do when the time comes. And I kept thinking about it. And I still keep thinking about it. I keep like, when I actually retire from this job, do I never not want to work at all? Do I still want to work part-time? Where do I want to live? You know, actually, it's kind of wild. It's wide open. Where do I want to live? Where do I want to settle? What do I want to do with this next chapter of my life? And all I'm hearing, all I'm feeling is God saying, you need to just quit thinking about it right now and hang tight. You need to just do what you're doing. You go to work, you go to church, you do the things you do. You need to keep living the life you're living right now. Just really don't even think about it right now. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? I don't understand. Why do you want me just to sit here and keep doing the same thing at the corner of Mundane and Grace when I'm ready to make some plans? But who knows best? Who knows best? God does. God knows the plan or the purpose that he has for my life. So when I'm making plans now, which are just pretty much day to day, okay, I've got this week to look at to get accomplished, or this month to look at to get accomplished, or certain things. Because of this situation that I'm in now, God is expanding my mindset to get a better grasp of plans and purpose. So I'm changing my question to God from what is the plan that you have to what is my purpose in life for you today? What is my purpose in life for you today? Because I can have my list of plans. I don't always write them out. Sometimes I do. Most of the time they're in my head. When I walk out the door in the morning, and I can guarantee you that 7 times out of 10, as soon as I walk in the door at work, within 10 minutes, those plans have gone awry. It just doesn't work that way all the time. But if I can say, dear Jesus, what is my purpose for you today? It doesn't matter whether my plans get derailed or they get off track. What is my purpose for you? What can I do to serve you in whatever my plan may be? It's been a real game changer, so to speak, with the new peace of mind that it can bring when you realize that God's purpose for us is to only bless us and bring us what is best. But what is God's ultimate purpose for us? To save us so that we will live eternally with him in heaven. So why shouldn't it be that that is my purpose in life when I am serving him, that everything I do leads towards that same goal? Why would I not say, whatever I do today, whatever my plans are, am I serving God, bringing glory to his name to meet our agreed goal that I will be saved and be in heaven with him? I think sometimes we get so hung up at the corner of mundane and grace of doing the same thing over and over and over again, because like I said, our lives are not miraculous lives for the most part, that we tend to lose sight of what the purpose of our life is all about. Now, with that said, I want to share that when we are at the corner of mundane and grace, and sometimes we get run down, and I loved your song, Terry, that sometimes we get in those ruts of we're desperate. We're just like, God, I need to see you. I mean, I hear what you're telling me to be patient, to be wait, to hang tight or whatever, but I just need to see you. I need to hear from you. I need something. Does God ever fail? No. When he hears that cry from our heart, he is there. In fact, he's already there most of the times before he hears that cry from our heart. So we were talking about birthdays earlier in this service, and my mother and I also had birthdays last weekend. Hers was last Saturday. Mine was Sunday. My mother-in-law's birthday was last Saturday. She turned 90, so I had a big weekend with birthdays. Okay, and this is sad. You get to that point, you know, where that thought was right there and poof, it is gone. And I was going somewhere with birthdays, and it'll come back around. I'll get back on it here in a minute. But as far as, God showing us that he is with us. For my birthday last Sunday, went into work on Monday. Many of you know that one of our new employees at Cajada Springs is Miss Annalise Hasty, the daughter of Laura and Gerald, who is an absolute jewel. And I came in and went to my office on Monday, and you would not believe what I saw. I mean, there were streamers that you had to fight your way through to get inside my office. There were streamers hanging everywhere in the office. There was confetti. There were flowers. There were chocolates. It was fabulous. It was just like, boy, how that lifted my spirit. But she also had made like a half-size piece of poster board that she'd put in a gold glittery frame, and she hung it up outside my office, and on it said, Happy Birthday. And she asked every one of the staff to make sure they went and signed that card for me. Well, you know, everybody comes up and they sign your card, you know, happy birthday, hope you have a great day, you know, you're a great boss or whatever. And it's wonderful. But the next day, I stopped to read what was on the card. One of the employees had written something about me that they saw in me that I never in a million years felt that I was projecting. But this person actually shared that they felt that they saw the Holy Spirit living in my life. And I was like, not me. Not me. You got it wrong. You're looking at the wrong person. But God was there saying, Sherry, when you allow your plans to reflect your purpose of serving me, I will shine through you. I will live through you. Other people will see me through you. You have to be consistent. You have to keep hanging on. You have to keep staying with me, whether you understand or not. You just have to trust me and be steady in your learning and your growing and your service. God has a purpose for each one of us. All he's asking of us is to surrender ourselves so that he can fulfill that purpose that he has for us. So the question is, are we willing to say, Dear Jesus, when I walk out today, use me in any way you can. When I walk into that office and I feel like I want to go, I'm giving you permission, come into my mind and heart and go, how can we help you? We have to be willing to let God lead. And not only that, we have to be consistent with inviting him into our lives. We have to live steady one day at a time at the corner of mundane and grace. The ultimate goal in Proverbs 19:21. It is the Lord's purpose that prevails. God's purpose wins in the end. There will be no more pain, no more tears, no more sorrow. When God prevails or is victorious, there will only be joy for his people. Joy. So in other words, if we will keep our heart focused in our life on the ultimate purpose, which is eternal life with him, that joy is ours now. If we will seize every day living a purpose-filled life for God, we have joy now, and we have the hope of the joy to come. There's a little story I want to just share with you in closing from this book at the corner of mundane and grace. It's called Kygo. With Batman on his chest and a black cape on his back, my son is an unlikely theologian. Besides, his eyes are too wide. You have to wear little spectacles and look erudite to be a true theologian. He's short. He's only a couple of feet tall, and he gives a blank stare when I bring up names like Calvin or Zwingli or Luther. He's only two. But the lessons he gives have stayed with me longer than those from just about any published author. Today's lesson concerns a wild dependence on God, something I lost along the way. Early in my Christian life, I felt a certain abandon, a lust for the spiritual. I wanted special access and special answers to my prayers. All this was fine for a while until my desires changed and I decided just to be practical. I settled for realism in my spiritual journey. I settled for less. Enter Batman theologian. He was there one day as I put on my shoes and reached for the door. He was just learning to talk, and before I had time to slip away, his little voice behind me said, Kygo? Oh, hi, buddy. I'm going to drop something off in the mailbox. Kygo? No, I'm just going to the mailbox. You stay here. He looked hurt. Kygo, he whined. An hour later, I was ready to retrieve his big brother at soccer practice, and I said, "I'll be right back." I yelled to the house, hoping my wife would hear me. Well, from a room upstairs, I heard pounding on the carpet. Batman at the top of the stairs comes running down. "Kygo! Kygo!" No matter what the occasion, a trip to the store, a walk to the park or the library, Batman is willing and anxious to go. He doesn't care what I'm doing. He doesn't mind if I'm not focusing on him as we head towards my important destination. All he wants is my presence. "Can I go?" he says in his own two-year-old way, "Kygo." The first time he said it, it took me a few moments to understand, but now I expect the words any time I'm going out. We were at the grocery store in the cheese section with Batman in the child seat facing me. I pushed, focusing on the task at hand, frustrated with the slowness of the other shoppers. And only inches from my face, the little Batman voice sang, "I'm so happy in Jesus every day." And I looked at him, and I stopped the cart. "Yeah, I think you're right," I said. Well, lately I've come to believe this is why God didn't give me a special pipeline or a positive answer to my early prayers. God had given me this little lump of flesh in a black and gold costume right when I needed it. My previous goal was the spiritual mountaintop and a palatable touch from God. Today I have a new prayer. God, I don't care where you take me. I don't care where you're going. I just want to be with you. Your agenda is my agenda. Your focus is my focus. I'll go wherever you go, and I'll be happy in whatever journey you provide. So maybe as we're thinking about our plans, we need to keep in mind, God, can I go with you today? God, can I go with you? Plans change. God never will. God has a purpose for us that he wants to bring to fruition. Let's help him. Let's have a purpose in our life every day.